Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello. I sure hope you are enjoying your summer. We're enjoying the sunshine and all the fun. Fair's coming up. We're in the thick of it. And I'm just going to deny that September's coming.
Right.
You're going to deny it?
I am. I'm a denier.
So you're a September denier.
I am.
You could start a conspiracy theory. September doesn't exist.
Oh,
I like it.
Yeah. Birds. It's the only kind of denier
Birds
I am.
Birds don't exist. Have you heard that one?
Oh, yeah.
I love that. Birds aren't real.
Yeah. I'm excited for our guest today.
I am too.
She's going to equal our energy, if not way more.
Oh my gosh.
The bar's been set.
A factor of 10.
Yes. We have Katrina Sturgeon. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we planned this months ago.
Absolutely.
To get it on her schedule because she's a busy woman.
But I'm going on the record. It sounds like a made-up name.
Sturgeon?
Yeah.
Oh. It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. The guy was worth it, so I'll take it.
You're trying to just like somehow feel like you belong in Astoria society.
Because she doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. There's our deep tease there, folks.
Right. We're going to get to that. Accepted. Fingers crossed after this.
So we should rush right through this.
Let's rush.
All right. So the history highlights, the things that happen tomorrow, as always, icebreakers or things to talk about around the dinner table. These are things that happen on July 28th, 1586. Ooh. Sir Thomas Harriot introduces potatoes to Europe on his return to England.
Okay.
Potatoes.
Thank you, Sir Thomas.
No kidding.
Right?
Potatoes.
Yeah.
I was almost going to make that the history highlight of the day.
It's kind of a big deal.
It is.
Curious what took its place. I mean, potatoes are a big deal.
Well, right. Speaking of that, I almost made this the history highlight of the day. 1900, the hamburger is created by Louis Lessing in Connecticut. The hamburger.
Roll here.
Hamburger.
Is it soft drink next?
It may be. That would be funny.
Interesting.
1932. Yeah, 1900. Before that, we didn't know what hamburgers were.
Right. What do we do with this part of the cow?
Yeah, that's right. 1932, the bonus marchers are evicted by the U.S. Army. So this is 1932. The guys that had served in World War I were promised a big bonus, but it wasn't supposed to come till much later. And during the Depression, they're like, hey, how about us getting our bonuses now?
Right.
And 20,000 of them marched on Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Ooh. And it was during the Great Depression, of course, and President Herbert Hoover orders the U.S. Army under General Douglas MacArthur to evict the force by force. And they'd asked the Senate, the legislature, and they were turned down. And like 18,000 of them went home, but 2,000 of them started just camping.
Oh.
And those were the ones that got forced out by General Douglas MacArthur in the U.S. Army.
Heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. All right. 1933, the first singing telegram is delivered to Rudy Vallee in New York City.
So what was it?
You know, I don't know for sure, but what I found odd is this is the first singing telegram, and it was delivered to Rudy Vallee, but it was for his birthday. So we don't know if it was just the birthday, you know, happy birthday. But it was created, this idea of singing telegrams was created by George Oslin of Western Union, who thought that messages should be fun. And it was sung over the telephone. But this Rudy Vallee guy is a singer.
Oh.
So doesn't that seem a little suspicious?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. But interesting. I mean, what a fun
Maybe they were thing. Pitching. They were pitching a new song or record.
That's what I'm kind of smelling, some collaboration there.
Yeah.
All right, 1945, a plane crashes into the Empire State Building because of heavy fog.
Oh.
And connected to that, I'm sure you've never heard of Betty Lou Oliver.
No.
She's known as Elevator Girl because she was in an elevator. She was the elevator operator in the building, and the cables were snapped.
Oh.
And she survived falling 75 stories.
What? How?
And
she's shorter?
Maybe. And she remains the world record for the longest survived elevator fall.
Wow.
Oh,
I want to know the
as you chuckle.
I want to know the poor person.
I know
that survived 74.
Right.
Didn't make the record.
If the elevator had just been two stories taller, I would have had the record.
Oh.
All right.
I think the prize there is surviving.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, it'd be nice to have a certificate, too.
Absolutely. Have your name read aloud in 2025.
That's right.
In Adventures in History. So Elevator Girl. Yeah, we should say it one more time. Elevator Girl, Betty Lou Oliver. Good for you.
Yes, we're proud of you.
Congratulations.
Right. 1978, Animal House is released in theaters.
Oh, fun.
And we do care because it's an Oregon film.
It is. Bobo, right?
Yep.
Eugene, Oregon.
And perhaps the second most asked about film made in Oregon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's the second most.
Perhaps.
Still? I mean, I wouldn't have thought it. Yeah. Well, still, yeah. I mean, because Oregon's popular, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
Beer.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. 1996, two men at a Washington State Park stumble on a skull, part of a skeleton later found to be more than 9,000 years old. It's one of the oldest found in North America. It's the Kennewick Man.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Another big one.
I find it amazing, or what a coincidence, that Kennewick Man is found near Kennewick, Washington.
His mother must have known his future.
Right.
And he looks like Captain Picard, I believe, when they reimage him.
Kind of does.
There's some good Star Trek.
but they repatriated. They buried him. They gave him back, and Native Americans gave him a proper burial.
Oh, good.
Yeah, okay. Isn't that nice?
That is nice.
All right, but I have a tie for our history highlights.
Okay.
The highlight of the
day. That happens.
I know. 1868, the 14th Amendment is adopted. So it's all persons born or naturalized in the United States are citizens.
Hmm.
So
it's never had any sort of discussion come up again or controversy.
Locked right in.
It was passed, and there you go. So if you're born in the United States, you are a citizen. 14th Amendment.
Okay.
All right. But something that I was going to have as the, but then I thought, well, that's kind of important too. So it's a tie. The other one is 1914. Austria-Hungary declares war on Serbia. It's 1 month to the day after the Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria and his wife were killed by a Serbian nationalist in Sarajevo. Austria-Hungary declares war on Serbia. And, of course, that sets off World War I because Russia is an ally with Serbia, so they have to join in. And Russia has an agreement with Britain and France, so they have to join in. And then Germany has to join in. And suddenly we're in a world war.
And then there's no resolution, so we have a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. So.
Okay. Well, yeah. So interesting.
Did I miss anything?
No, because I didn't know what day it was. I mean, it's summer, Mac. I'm not doing these things.
Wow. You're on break here?
I'm on break.
She's anti-September. She's anti-date knowing.
No,
it's a good life.
Kidding. Yeah, wow. But I booked us a great guest.
You did. You
and she has all the things. So let's,
all the things.
All the things. She's going to bring us up to date. So it's Katrina Sturgeon.
Correct.
And I just learned today, you are, what did you say, sixth generation
Astorian. Yes.
So let's start with that. Bring us back six generations.
Well, I checked my Cumtux magazine, dated the winter of 1983. Mm-hmm. I was 1 year old, for the record.
So it must be true since it's in Cumtux.
Right. It must be true. It's printed, absolutely, by my cousin Betty Satterwhite wrote this, but it talks about that our first time our family visited Clatsop County was 1856, and then we ended up settling here in 1870.
And did it say where here was?
Waleski. That's where my people are from. That's where our heart is for sure, is Waleski. So they had 265 acres and started a dairy farm.
Oh my goodness. And where'd they come from?
Prussia.
Okay.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Prussia.
They were getting out of there because they knew that whole World War I thing is going to happen.
Right. That is the
They were just getting out about, you know, 75 years early.
Yeah. Good timing. It was good timing.
So jump back just a second here. I'm curious because your family goes so far back, and two things about that. One, I like that they came here and then they left and then they came back in 1870. Yeah. So I'm curious, like, what did they not find here that they're like, eh, we'll go someplace else.
Right.
But the other thing, just curious if you, because you did do some research, you got a big stack of Cumtuxes in front of you. So I love that ad for Cumtux.
Absolutely.
Is this something you grew up knowing? Like, wow, I'm sixth generation. My people have been here forever.
Absolutely.
Did your family kind of celebrate that? Was there pride in that?
Absolutely. Tons of pride in it. Specifically with the Waleski connection as well. And then that connection, the first schoolhouse in Waleski. So starting that tradition, it was a Bartolda schoolhouse. So education has been a big part of my career path and experience. So it was dropped. The number was hard for me because I felt like our generations always fluctuated. And my third and my seventh. And when I would say it out loud to somebody, they'd look at me like, are you sure that's how long? And I was like, I don't know, maybe not. But I counted it. It's here. It's official.
Six generations.
Yeah. And I'm raising the seventh.
Oh my goodness.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So tell us about your family then. What kept your family here? And this is dad's side.
Mom's side.
Mom's side. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, good deal. So I think everybody kind of, not everybody stays, but at least a couple stay behind as far as the sibships go. So my mom stuck around in Clatsop County. Her brother traveled abroad and lived in Japan and back and forth now in Eugene. My Auntie Daintree's in Hawaii. My Auntie Sarah's in Seattle. So people are, you know, close and around. But there, I think that there's definitely that tie in that connection there. So my grandparents own City Transfer and Storage downtown 1152 Marine Drive. And so that home base has still been established in regards to that too.
And then you went to school in Astoria?
I did for a bit and then I was homeschooled.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So I was homeschooled and 4-H was a huge part of my life, a lot of volunteering. And then my auntie opened JJ Cafe in downtown Astoria, and I started working at 12 there. Just
oh
as like a part-time thing. It was fantastic for a homeschooler. So, you know, I made sure I brushed my hair, got up.
So where was that, and describe what it was and how long that existed?
My aunt's cafe?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So it was Janice Rummel. So I also am tied to the Rummel family, which is huge. Sorry about that. And that was downtown Astoria. It was down by the same block between Liberty Theater and JCPenney's when it was there. Tiny little one. It did like stuffed baked potatoes that were fantastic. We had deli sandwiches, frappes. It was fantastic.
Was there a bar you sat at?
Yeah. Like, there was a cool bar.
Like a soda fountain type of a restaurant.
Was. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
fun.
And as a 12-year-old, are you getting paid or are you just being forced to be there?
No, not forced. It was definitely a highlight to get out and talk to people besides my siblings or, you know, family. I was getting paid and it was just like during the lunch rush. So just a couple hours waitressing, but definitely helped me feel more comfortable being outgoing and engaging with folks.
Wow. Okay. So, and what age did you go to school? And then when did you get homeschooled?
Fifth grade is when we transitioned. I have my first cousins, my parents adopted, so we're also my sisters. And there was, you know, some adjustments in regards to middle school life at that time. And so my parents were like, hey, how about we take on this thing called homeschooling before the internet? So that was an interesting experience.
Right. Really. That's true.
It is. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So what sort of freedom did you have then growing up? I mean, so you had this homeschool experience going on and then you also explored or went out on your own too.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
To work.
Right. So my mom was great at signing us up for things. We were always involved in volunteering, which has definitely trickled into my adulthood for sure. So we were on committees or we were helping clean up things. Wherever there was community activity that was needed, we would find that we had been signed up for that experience, which turned out to be pretty good as far as connections go. And then my sisters and I started at Clatsop Community College when we were 14.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, and then we worked on our GED under George Heiner was there, Chandra Waddell, who's still active in this community, and Mary Jackson. No, Mary, I think, but she's still around too. So got our GEDs, and then we started taking full-time classes. But before that, we're taking some part-time classes too.
And you were out in the country.
Yeah. So we did move quite a bit. I've had a variety of living experiences for sure. Didn't always have access to the land that the
right had. You're like, where is this now?
Yeah, no, we did. We ended up moving back there eventually, which was good for a short period of time, but it was awesome. So we moved around a little bit, that kind of thing, and graduated from Clatsop Community College at the same time I was supposed to be completing high school. So I was going to be the class of 2000.
Oh my goodness.
So we got our degrees, my sisters and I, from CCC and went on to U of O.
Wow.
And when you went off to school, what were you going to go and do?
Oh, good question. I wanted to save the world or be the first woman president of the United States of America. So I've adjusted a little
bit. There's still time for both.
Right. Yes. Seems exhausting. In my 40s, it's very exhausting to think about. But I studied psychology. My goal was to go into social work in some way after that, or maybe child psychology. I'm there.
Okay. But you didn't, or you did do that.
Right. So I completed my degree at U of O with psychology. My sister and I moved to India and lived there for about 6 months. And we were volunteering at a vocational training school for rural and tribal women called Barley.
And how did you get connected with that?
Yeah, how does that happen?
Right. So I'm a member of the Baha'i Faith. And so the very international in regards to the service and that kind of thing. So we went and supported a school there that had that as a foundation to it, but really a lot of focus on industry skills and literacy, health skills. It was incredible.
I see transitions and, here already happening in your life,
and,
right?
And do you choose India? Do you get assigned India? Is that on a list that you want to go? How do you get to India?
We chose it. So it was really cool because we got the opportunity. At that time, you could kind of research and see and make connections. So we reached out directly to the director of the training school, and she accepted us, and we went on over and got to be there for 6 months volunteering. And then we went over to Delhi, New Delhi, and volunteered at the Lotus Temple that's there, which is another, high holy place. So
what did you think about that? You're pretty young still at this point, and a woman in these countries. What was that? How did you...
It was fantastic. And it was fantastic. And so I had started, we have family in Dominican Republic. So when I was 5, we went there for about a month. My mom had cancer for a bit. And so while she was healing up, my grandma took us to Dominican when I was 5 for a month, which was fantastic. And then when I was 16 and 17, for those summers, I spent them in Russia, in Siberia, and then Vladivostok. One summer in there, one summer there. And then when I was 18, spent the summer in Belize. And this is all service-based, so we're doing a lot of volunteering, and like we did hurricane cleanup and that kind of thing.
So is this because of your faith that you get? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just, it was a lot of service, a lot of travel, a lot of saving through the years so that we could do that. And the flexibility without the full schedule, school schedule helped with that quite a bit.
So when you're doing all of the service, do you actually get to enjoy the places that you're in at all, or are you all just focused on we're building this house,
right?
We're doing this?
Right. And I can't speak for how service projects are now, but tons of flexibility. So we would get to travel and make friends and take trips on trains and, get in some situations that later I was like, oof, especially now looking back, where I'm like, oh my gosh, I was pretty young in some situations that I'm so happy turned out really well. There are amazing, incredible, compassionate people across the world. And you don't even have to know the language sometimes. They connect and they step up for you in ways in adulthood I reflect on and think, wow, incredible. These people would be so generous with their time.
So for the places that you spent more than, say, a month, what's your favorite and why? And then what's your least favorite and why?
Ooh. That's a good question. That's
you don't have to badmouth the place. Yeah. You just say, hey, I didn't like this because it was bad.
Right. I would say I know India was my favorite. And I think that's because I got to be there for 6 months. And later when I had talked to people who went for just 2 weeks, the contrast of the caste system or the lingering parts of that was difficult for them and it was heavy. But I got to stay in homes. I got to stay the night for a week in a home that Gandhi had tea in, and the walls were kind of – they were like these dried mud, so I didn't want to lean on them because it would, dye my clothes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Russia was a big part of my life for those 2 summers, so I felt really, really connected to that. And Russian culture was interesting for me because initially, so on the streets, I'm bright-eyed – small town homeschool kid, okay? Platinum blonde hair with a little bit of roots. It's the 90s. And I was just smiling to everybody walking down the street, right? And then one of my friends kind of pulled me to the side and was like, you have to stop doing that. We don't do this here.
You got to tone it down.
This is not acceptable. So I learned to have more of that cautious face, but in behind closed doors, incredible compassion, just people really stepping up. My parents would write very lengthy emails, and send them to a friend Andre's email address. Andre would scribe, handwrite every single one. And he was from the Esperanto Club, which is a universal language that, I don't know if you know much about it. He would write these down, and eventually I had to schedule a call with them and tell them, stop it. Mm-hmm. This man is walking miles to bring me handwritten letters,
Oh my goodness.
But Andre said he enjoyed it because he was learning English more and being able to do that. And this man was not a member of the Baha'i faith. He was just this curious individual wanting to connect, which is what I've seen over and over again, regardless of the country. Belize, I was there probably the shortest amount. And it was a little bit more challenging. And I think that there were some things I wasn't ready to accept or understand as a young white woman growing up in a pretty white town. So I walked into spaces assuming a lot of things that I had to adjust for and learn. And life has offered those opportunities later on. Did I answer that question?
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. Yeah. So then what's next? You're a world traveler.
Right.
You think you're going to go into psychology?
Yeah. So then I applied for my master's in social work. Did not get in.
Oh.
So tail between my legs. And that was from India with recommendations from the director. So came home and lived at home. I was like, okay, I'm going to work for the summer. What am I going to do? And I got a job at Tongue Point Job Corps Center and loved it. And realized this is a vocational training school in my backyard. Serving and connecting with people who have so many barriers possibly, sometimes just financial, which I like to push back on that. Sometimes it's financial, right? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I think of this before? Not only as a place to work and where I can direct my attention, but also as an education opportunity. Because I saw students, I was making, oh my gosh, $9.75 when I started there with a four-year degree and some experience, right? Students were leaving making way more than that with one year of training certifications and no debt. So that opened my eyes, kept me focused on workforce development, and I was at Tongue Point for 20 years.
And what? How old were you then?
I was 22.
Oh my goodness.
I know, right?
Yeah. And you'd already had like this lifetime of experience because you graduated so early.
Right. Yeah. So
I love Tongue Point, and it's making me sick what is going with Job Corps right now around the country, and especially the one here. 20 years, is there any one success story of some kid that you can think of that because my first experience, when I first got to town, somehow I got a tour, and it was just me. And they had a young woman that was about 20 that was about to graduate from the maritime program.
Yeah.
And she kind of gave me her life story that single mom, boyfriends were abusing her. She was couch surfing. This was a way out.
Right.
And she was about to leave. And this is 20 years ago, with a job offer in 2 weeks. She was trying to decide which one to take. One was $80,000 and one was like $120,000.
Yes. Those are real stories. So when you say one, it's hard to narrow it down. But I traveled to Norfolk, Virginia for a work conference. I work for the workforce board now, Northwest Oregon Works, and got to connect with one of our students in Norfolk who was a seamanship student. So two students. And Lonnie is one, Lonnie Buchanan, who continues to be working in maritime. And I nudged him a little bit just to share. Like, don't give me exact figures, but like, where are you at? So he pulled up the job that's similar to his within the same place. He's making six figures, right? And this was a young man who came from a very rough environment, who admitted, like, this saved my life, you know, and those stories exist all the time. But as the person who promoted Job Corps for a long time, I'd say those stories are fantastic and wonderful, but so would have my story been if I had known about Job Corps as a career path. And I had started with that 1 year, get that certification, whatever I can, and then went on. The incredible support that happens beyond just the industry and certifications, the residential environment, the opportunity to be a leader, to meet people from Ethiopia and all these different places that exist there. That Job Corps experience is rich in so many ways and can benefit. All you need to do be is 16 to 24 and low income.
One of the other things I love about that program, too, is the sense of volunteering and the importance of volunteering.
Yeah.
That, I mean, just the historical side, we've had so many kids come out and do different things for us, and I know they're all over the community. And I think that ingrain something, it hopefully, does. For some of these kids.
Absolutely. And they were absolutely students. They had a requirement each year to do a certain, tons of students who would go above and beyond all the time. And you knew you could rely on them to show up and help out and contribute in great ways.
Well, I think we've learned, and you learned personally, that all kids learn differently.
Oh, for sure.
Right? So when we try to teach them all the same way out of one book in a classroom, sitting down still, it's not going to work for all of them ever. It never is. And so Job Corps is such a great example of that. And I mean, really, it seems like you've just lived the Job Corps life.
And a lot of
know this story,
right? Yeah. In a lot of ways, for sure. And even if they learn a great way one way, what's going to give them the foundation they need to be successful without necessarily debt associated with it? So a lot of people who are collegiate get pushed in that direction, but I think they miss out on some other career opportunities that would have served them really well.
Well, even as you experienced going away from home and living somewhere, right? So that's an experience as well.
Oh,
and it gives independence and to have a community and to get along with your neighbor and your roommate.
Right. Oh, for sure.
All those things.
Communication.
So where do we go back, Mac? Do we go back to the schoolhouse? I mean, with her? How far back do we want to go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot because you've done research, but you've done research. So what stories from your family history do you want to share? Anything that jumped out at you or family lore or the property?
I have some family shame I uncovered here.
Ooh,
yeah.
Yeah, apparently we had a beaver, an OSU member in our family.
I did not know that. It's marked on page 33. So I'm going to go back and talk to folks about that because we, as far as I know, we're all ducks. So.
I was waiting for the story of somebody that killed a guy.
Mac was really interested here.
I could keep digging. I'll find out.
Ran him out of town on the railroad.
Well, maybe. I mean, we got to go back and look at this. But I'm loving that. When I look through these stories, so on the Bartolda side, I have the generational thing. On my dad's side, the Morrell side, my grandma Joyce Morrell has contributed a lot of content to the Heritage Museum. So she's, you know, done a lot of geological work. right? The generational stuff about family. Am I saying everything? Okay, good. Okay. And so she's written quite a bit too about the cemeteries and the research that she's contributed. So I've enjoyed researching and learning about that too.
So does the family homestead, the original farm, dairy farm, does that property still exist in your family at all?
Or? No, it does not. There's a little bit left. They just sold off some shared property, I think. And maybe Betsy. So actually, Betty Satterwhite might still be on some family land there, or the Rainies. They're twins. Helen and Betty are twins. And I get them confused. I'm sorry, Helen and Betty, if you're listening. Yeah, so there's still a little bit left there for sure. But we also had the River Point. There's the Bartles Loop over there. Oh, yes. We had the Cavalier Courts with the Navy housing. So quite a bit over there where we can still point and say, that was ours one day.
So in one of the original homes on Bartolius Loop, did your family then live in that one? Yes. The one that's facing the water?
So there's one that I think Lola used to have, that Auntie Susan has. It moved about 400 feet. Yeah, and so she's still in that home.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, there is a home there where the front door faces the water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because there were no roads.
Correct.
That was your
so
front.
The front, front door is, yeah. And mm-hmm. so the entire home, it's the only one you can.
And so what I read about here is that people would show in the evenings or afternoons, Lola would have a pie ready. She had her own bathroom downstairs. They got two working bathrooms in the house, and she would get all dolled up. And she'd go downstairs. She'd happen to have a pie ready for whoever happened to show up in a boat to mingle with her. So she was living a good life.
Sounds like my kind of girl.
Right? Yeah,
seriously. Okay. I know. Eyes on the river.
Getting all dolled up, ready.
That's right. Two bathrooms and a pie. I mean,
that's another title for something, huh?
Yeah, that's true.
I think so.
So what are the things that you love about here? You've traveled all over the world. What is it that keeps you right here?
Community, this kind of connection. It was neat that you reached out to me and were like, what do you think? And I was a little bit nervous at first. And I thought, you know, I think this is good.
I know, Mac, I was like, really? You were nervous?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was really nervous. Yeah. I think that sense of community where there's a lot of projects that I know that I want to give my energy to or time to, right? I've sat on a lot of boards and volunteered for a lot of things. So I'm happy to not be on boards right now, but I know when I can step in and volunteer. And so Clatsop County Fair is a big one where I've been doing that probably, I think, 10 or 15 years now from various positions. But I'm a volunteer coordinator, and I encourage folks to look into turning in their exhibits. We got Sasquatch calling, so I want people to come and do that. Please, it's a live contest, chili contest, you know, turn in your
live entertainment.
Yeah, there's cool stuff, but we coordinate the contest stuff. So that's the part where I get to push that a little bit.
Do those things. Oh, look Sasquatch up on the contest. I'm looking at you, Mac.
Can you call the Sasquatch?
Oh, can you call it?
You got to call it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like it. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking all the hair.
Right. Yeah. The volunteer crew that I have are incredible. They come back every year, which I appreciate. And, the fair board and staff have been incredible in supporting, and any cool ideas that we have, really nurturing those and making us feel appreciated as a volunteer team. So I'm here because of the sense of community. I'm here because when I post something on social media, if I need help because I backed my RV into a branch, hypothetically, I've got friends who are able to show up, or husbands, you know, friends of whatever, that are showing up and helping out. So
you do always have the most random requests.
And they always get fulfilled. So that's community. I love it. Small town life is funny to explain to especially a lot of my other friends.
If we can't see you out in the community at all of these events, which we do in 30 seconds, where can we find you? What are you doing?
Great. Yeah, I work from home now with Northwest Oregon Works, the local workforce board, still focused on workforce development under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which is federally funded, and the same act that funds Job Corps.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. All that you do sharing your adventures. It was fun, wasn't it?
It was fun. Thank you.
I told her, well, we appreciate you and your service to our community. Thanks, Katrina.
All right. Thanks for listening. Go make some history. We will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.